Hello and welcome to episode 17 of Fresh Out of Tokens podcast. This is Tanya, also known as Cypher of Tyr. In most places online, if you find another one, I'm sorry, someone has chosen to imitate me, and I should apologize to them for doing so. And to my virtual right, as always, is David. Say hi, David.
Hello. I can be found most places as Red Conversation.
Yay. I'm very glad you are here. And I will keep a cap on my fangirling for our guest today. We have with us, from BioWare, Alan Shoemaker, and I made sure I said it right. I always mispronounce your name at other times. If you want to say hi, Alan, before we get into the intro.
Hello.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us, because I know I'm super excited about it, and I will contain my fangirl squee.
Well, I'm flattered. Thanks for the invite.
Oh, you're very welcome. So our usual intro spiel before we get into questions is that we are part of the Geek.fm network, along with Geeks in Sneaks, Chromatic Life, and More Than Bits podcasts. You can find us all at Geek.fm. And if you ever want to show your Fresh Out of Tokens or other Geek.fm pride, you can find stuff from us at the I Neediverse Games Spreadshirt shop, and that link is always in the show notes. If you ever feel the need to have a lengthy conversation with us, we do have a blog to complement the show, and you can follow us at outoftokenscast.wordpress.com and continue the conversation that might be a little too long for Twitter. So with our usual, you know, opening spiel out of the way, we can get right into the questions. So Alan, for those people who might not know who you are or what exactly you do at BioWare, can you fill us in?
So, yeah, my name is Alan Shoemaker, and so I started in quality assurance, QA, way back in 2009, and that's where I've been ever since, either as what we kind of call ourselves QA analysts, which are kind of like testers who test a particular part of the game. I was historically in like the back end part of it, so I would work on the tools and make sure that the workflows that the people used to create the game were working properly. And now I'm in a title, what they call SDET, S-D-E-T, which is like software development, engineering, and test. Like, so basically, it's a fancy way of saying that I do more programming related work to support the QA. So whether or not it be, you know, someone in QA is saying, hey, can we get you to write this, you know, console command so that we can do this thing? Or, you know, a programmer's might be, hey, if you could set up some automated test suites for these particular systems, that'd be great. So that's what I'm doing now, which is really exciting for me because it's a little bit more in tune with I have a computing science degree from the local university, so I'm getting to flex those chops a bit more, but I'm really enjoying it. So that's what I do.
Cool.
All right. We usually start with the question of how did you get into gaming?
That's a pretty open question, I suppose. What got me into gaming, I think, was just I grew up, my dad was always like an Apple dealer, Apple technician. So we grew up with the old Apple II, which were actually pretty common gaming computers way back in the day. So that was sort of my introduction into gaming, was literally being, I believe I was 3 years old and just going, what's this thing? I see dad turn it on all the time. So I would turn it on and start mashing on the keyboard. Next thing you know, I'm being introduced to all sorts of games, classic old school games like Lode Runner was probably my favorite growing up. And yeah, just some of those old Apple II classics. And then from there, it was just sort of a seed that kept growing and growing and growing. Got into, you know, schoolmates had Nintendos, I got a Nintendo, and it has just escalated since then. And now I'm a pretty hardcore enthusiast and have been pretty much since I was a teenager.
Very cool. Well, I don't know if I remember playing those games because we didn't have a computer growing up. So a lot of my first gaming was like on the ColecoVision and then in arcades.
Yep, I'm familiar with the ColecoVision. There was an old racing game on that called Pit Stop that I loved.
Oh my god, Pit Stop. Hmm. I haven't heard that in years. Now I want to go find an emulator. So this is probably like my most fangirly question I'll ask, because I'm always just curious, like how did you wind up working at BioWare specifically?
Well, I ended up getting a lot of kind of luck of the draw in that a game studio that made games that I really, 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 really liked happened to be in the same city of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, which would strike me as not a, something I would have predicted based on, you know, a lot of game development happens, you know, Montreal, the coast, Austin and stuff like that. So we have one, it happened to be this, you know, arguably my favorite studio. So that certainly made it a lot easier for me to get in, certainly from a temporary type of position. That's how I actually started up on Dragon Age Origins. They made a call. I had some friends who worked there and they passed on my resume on my behalf, which I'm very grateful for. But yeah, it was just, we're looking to get some extra hands on Dragon Age Origins, especially with the console versions, which they were working on at the time. So it's maybe a little unglamorous. It wasn't anything super fancy. I know some people who've written, you know, really hilarious cover letters that got attention and stuff, but I had technical skills and knew a person who was able to vouch for me as a person. So that got me into the interview process. And then I guess from what I've heard, I did really, really well on the phone interview and they brought me in and I guess the ship sailed since then. After a year, they liked what I was doing and they're like, we'd like to make you a permanent employee. And I was like, I would like to accept that offer. So it's still a little bit surreal. I remember when I first started, it was crazy surreal because walking around going, oh my God, that's like David Gator. Hey, that's Rimu Zika just said hi to me in the elevator. And it's, was like, is this actually happening? But I've gotten pretty used to it now, I think.
Do you find people kind of, you know, fanboy, fangirl at you when they realize you work at BioWare?
Depends on the context. At a place like PAX, PAX 2013 was like the first ever con I'd ever been to in my entire life. And I was there on behalf of BioWare, kind of with the Dragon Age Inquisition starting to get more exposure at that time. And yeah, when someone found out that I worked at BioWare and they just, it was actually another developer because I had 1 hour of early access to be able to kind of see the show floor before the show actually opened. And they're just like, who do you work for? I'm like, oh, I work for BioWare. And they're like, oh my God. And it just was sort of this realization that I guess to, you know, gaming community, I am innately kind of a celebrity, I guess, especially I was a bit more active on like the forums and stuff like that. So there were people who knew who I was. So yeah, there were people, it's always, I think I like the reaction when people will be like, you know, I'm so-and-so, you probably don't remember me from like the forums. And I was like, oh yeah, you would talk about, you know, this particular topic. And then they're just like, oh my God, he remembers. So it was the first realization that, yeah, to some people, like, yeah, my affiliation, you know, with BioWare makes me somewhat of a celebrity simply because, yeah, I'm the person who helps make the thing that they really enjoy. So it's circular, I think. It feeds back. The enthusiasm shown is pretty contagious.
Well, yeah. I mean, you saw how I kind of flailed when you retweeted something from me, so we can laugh about it now, but I was like, oh my God.
I'm the same way, so I mean, I grew up like Sid Meier or Chris Avellone and those types where, you know, made the games that I was really, really influential in my formative teenage years, so even now, you know, one of them will retweet me, and I'm like, oh my God, I just got retweeted by him, so
that's
I know,
awesome.
I still know how it is.
Yay.
So you've worked on all three Dragon Age games so far.
Yep.
And your role in the team has changed as time went on. Do you want to talk about your experiences, you know, and from where you started to where you are now, that sort of thing? Is there anything that sticks out?
Sure. Well, I sort of hinted at it a little bit with the early parts was what they call like a QA analyst type of position. And I started off contract with that and then Dragon Age Origins finished up, went into DA2. And my role there, I think most people think, okay, you know, QA sits down and they play the game, you know, day in and day out, which, and there are certainly some people who on QA who do stuff like that. But for for myself anyways, my boss at the time, his name was Zach, he was like, you have a strong technical background, so we want to try to, you know, leverage that in a more kind of unique way. So I was actually excited for that. I was willing to sort of pay my dues just sitting down playing the game over and over, but I also understood that might not be as interesting long term. So I was really grateful when they were like, okay, you understand, you know, the NW scripting language, the same Neverwinter scripting language that they used in Dragon Age. So I was able to help write scripts to do testing, and I could actually get right into some of the design details for how things were working. And because I had a programming background, they basically, what they did is they integrated me right into a scrum, at the time, just the tools team, and it evolved on Dragon Age Inquisition to be the digital acting team. So we were all about, you know, the conversation system, the cinematic system, and all of that stuff that basically went in to BioWare games, you know, very cinematic and you know, all about writing the characters and getting those interactions with the characters, especially with Dragon Age Inquisition, that didn't really exist in the Frostbite engine before we started working on it. So it was that transition from a very established, if old, engine that we used for Dragon Age Origins and Dragon Age 2 and getting that ramped up. So it was really cool to kind of be on the ground level of, like, we're building completely brand new stuff, not just iterating on stuff that already existed. And then now that Dragon Age was over, you know, towards the end of Dragon Age, I started to, again, use more of my programming chops, and I was starting to, you know, create lookup scripts to find potential pain points. You know, hey, this asset has 50,000 polygons, and should it really have that much? And, you know, helping find out which assets hadn't been properly set for optimizations, and, you know, this particular type of event is supposed to be evolved into this other type, but we still have some old assets that use it, so we need to keep track of that sort of stuff. So that was me kind of going and doing more programming stuff, and people were really happy with it. Some of the QA customers, your Dragon Age Inquisition has so many different permutations of armors and stuff like that, and trying to make sure that things were set to the right ones going into the actual editor would have just been mind-numbing. So, and prone to human error. So I would, like, write scripts and stuff like that, basically kind of helping the rest of the QA do their jobs more effectively so that they weren't wasting their time kind of doing mundane clicks. So once I did that, they're like, hey, you know what? We're kind of building a team. We want to keep doing stuff like this. We'll put you on Mass Effect Andromeda with a couple of other people doing similar work to that. And I was super excited for that. So that's what I'm doing now, and I've been doing that basically since the start of the year. And like I said, I get to do more programming stuff. Just today, actually, I was hooking in events so I can properly track, you know, when various combat events were going off so that I could write automated tests. So when programmers go to make a change, they can run this test suite and it goes and says, you know, here's some basic autonomy, you know, can you fire a weapon? Can you use an ability or whatever whatever they're asking for? So hopefully I can catch any issues that their code or design changes might have before they actually get into the build, because it's always cheaper and faster and more efficient to catch bugs as soon as possible. So that's just one way to get it as early in the pipe as we possibly can. And that's the way it's been going for me. Yeah.
Oh, that's so awesome. Cause just, I've got a computer science background as well, but not on the programming side, more on the usability side. So that's all really fascinating to me. To see how you can improve a process before you even get into the build stage for something.
Absolutely, yeah. It's I think that's one thing that people, like, yeah, people, when they imagine QA, it's like, you know, people who are going to, you know, grandma's boy or something like that, where, okay, I'm just going to play the game and, you know, go through all the levels, tighten up the graphics on level 3, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas, yeah, because we're creating our own tools, those tools, just like a game, are going to have bugs that go into them. So, yeah, a lot of the work that I do has been more making sure that people are able to do their work as efficiently as possible, because if you're writing conversations or something like that, and you realize that your conversations aren't properly being brought into the game properly in due to, like, some pipeline related error, and then that's going to impact the team's ability to work. And if your team isn't able to work efficiently, then, you know, if build breaks and no one can work for a day, and you have, you know, 100 people, everybody, you just lost 100 man days of time on a project because everyone was sitting around trying to work around that issue. So it's super, super duper vital and important to be able to make sure that the tools and workflows are working properly, not just the main game.
Awesome. Funnily enough, this question wound up with me. So one thing that BioWare often gets kudos and criticism for is diversity in titles, you know, especially Dragon Age and Mass Effect. Since you've worked on all three Dragon Age games, how have you seen an evolution in how diversity has been handled in that title or in Mass Effect as someone who's played it but not really worked on it until recently?
Mass Effect, I can actually really only speak, as a player. In fact, when we had staff meetings, I would, like, plug my ears because I didn't want to get spoiled for Mass Effect. One disadvantage of working at a game studio is you'll never be able to play the game that you work on the same way. To start with Dragon Age, the most obvious one, and this is, sort of goes back to, you know, the things that I wasn't even aware of until they were brought up to me, and you will go, oh, wait a minute, that's actually a good point. I didn't even think about that. The most obvious one is the Kuzlin family. So if you were to make a non-white character and suddenly you're walking around and your whole family is still white, and it's like, oh, wait a minute, I didn't even think that that might be an issue. So I know in DA2, we tried taking into account that if how you created your character and the character creator was, you know, we need to make sure, because your family was so integral in that story, especially, and everybody was going to have to, you know, interact with your family, that to try to take into account that, okay, we need to recognize that, you know, people are going to have different ethnicities when they create their hawk. So I think that's just some of the things that kind of goes on from that one. It's the most, I think, obvious example. With respect to, I mean, obviously the other angle, that's from, I guess, more racial perspective, but also, you know, gender. Krem is, I think, a fantastic example where we're kind of going off the gender binary, for which I didn't even know we were actually doing. So when I saw that in game, when I was playing it myself, I was like, oh, hey, we did this. I wasn't expecting this. And I thought that was actually really cool. And it was kind of cool to be like, hey, I worked on a project that took a chance and tried to do something like this. And then also on top of that is obviously the romances are the big one. You can look at Dragon Age Origins, and, you know, we only had two romances, and only one of them was available for, you know, same-sex relationship for a man and for a woman each, where, you know, we tried doing Dragon Age 2, which I think worked as a kind of interim solution, but people kind of pointed out to me, and this is actually a really eye-opening thing, I got it from PAX Prime 2013, where they were talking about, you know, that type of representation. We had a panel, and you know, there were some people who were like, you know, I'm a bisexual and it seems like my sexuality is kind of seen as a, you know, a convenience. We'll just make all the romance options being bisexual. And that kind of made me feel a little bit off. So when I found out that, you know, especially originally we were thinking with six, two, two, and two, I was like, for Dragon Age Inquisition, I was like, you know what, maybe this is a better way of doing it. Obviously, no one who's a fan of, you know, the character interactions is going to complain about having more romance options. I enjoy our characters. I like interacting with our characters, but that we were kind of able to, kind of, I guess, yeah, spread out the diversity a little bit more and have, you know, here's a person with a particular type of, you know, sexual orientation, and that, you know, they exist, they're normal people, all of that fun stuff, I think is very important. So once I started going with that, the PAX Prime 2013 was kind of really eye-opening for, like, on the LGBTQ, you know, T especially has been very, very new for me. So I hesitate to even speak too much on it because I'm sure I'll probably just make mistakes, but I'm glad that we did that sort of stuff. And I think it's good to both see it in the media and also to talk with fans who are like, you know what, I'm really glad that you did this and thank you because it's important to me. And that kind of just reinforces that I'm like, you know what, I'm glad that we did this. And I think it's good for me as well just to continuously be exposed to that sort of stuff because a lot of times the media isn't.
Yeah, because, you know, it's interesting. Because I've played all three games multiple times, and Mass Effect. And, you know, the whole Kuzlin thing was one thing that kind of almost threw me out of immersion with the game.
Yeah, no, I think it's like, a fair point.
I was just like, wait, I'm brown, but this is not my family. What happened? You know, but I was really, really super excited to see that in Dragon Age 2. You know, and seeing a brown hawk with a brown family just, like, gave me such a warm fuzzy. So thank you, as a fan.
No, I'm glad, so.
Now, so who, tell Patrick or whoever's in charge of hair. That's our next hurdle to take over.
Yeah, well, I know, I was just as a fan, I went to PAX South. I wasn't there on behalf of BioWare, but I did swoop by the BioWare base, and I remember Matt Goldman, who's kind of our art director for Dragon Age, you know, people were like, is there anything you wish you could have done differently? And the first thing he said is like, well, I think we can cross hair off the list right away. So I think, there's always kind of the warts, and they, depending on what they can be, they can really stick out for us. And you're just like, I wish we could have done this, but eventually it's, we need to get the product out type thing. So yeah, I think hair is a very, very valid critique, and you're probably not alone in that.
No, but I will not be that fan. And, you know, I'm going to leave the next question for David, which we kind of started into, but, you know, I will leave it for him too.
Yeah, it's the question we have written down is the exact question you just mentioned, which is if there was anything you could change about Dragon Age games now that Inquisition's epilogue is out, what would those be? What would that be?
I think it's safe to say that hair. So yeah, just trying to think on what else might be, like, there were things that I thought we did a good attempt, and it's nice to have the foundation, but I'm someone who's a fan of, like, the tactical camera and some of that stuff compared to, you know, so you look at the tactics from DA2 to DAI, people will be like, oh, you know what, these aren't as fleshed out, and I think that's valid. I would have loved to have seen more of that sort of stuff. It's probably dangerous. You give me total creative control. You know, I'm hearing about people's responses to Trespasser and stuff, and they're like, oh my God, my heart. And I'm like, I don't know. I think we kind of went light on you. So maybe it's probably good that I don't have creative control, because I can be pretty masochistic in my gaming tastes, I think. So maybe take that one with a grain of salt. Be grateful that it's Patrick writing the epilogue and not me. He's much better at it than I am anyways. But, yeah, I still actually need to play the epilogue myself. I've seen some bits and pieces that some fans have said, but it's one of the things that, because I was working on Andromeda, I know the big event, which I won't spoil for people in case they still haven't yet played it, but, you know, those big conversations and stuff like that happened, but it was a delight seeing a lot of that smaller stuff. One thing I thought, I'm a big fan of, you know, choices and consequences. I actually really liked when they came in, the war table type stuff, for really kind of fleshing out little flavor type events. The only thing that I found, I love that if you send Liliana or Josephine or Cullen on each of those events, that they would get their, they would have their own take on how to, or, you know, how to resolve that event. Sometimes I wish that things might have gone, especially for some of the chaining ones, if they'd gone out a little bit differently and maybe had a little bit more different types of consequences. I think that would have been interesting. So I think that one's probably a little bit off the wall, because it's, it was something that I really, really liked. I don't know how much other people actually enjoyed it, but yeah, and just seeing stuff like that get fleshed out, because I think Dragon Age is a really interesting setting. So it was kind of just neat to feel like I was the guy in charge, and I would have actually seen a little bit more of that. Would have been interesting for me.
Yeah, since it just came out at the time, yesterday at the time we're recording this, I will not spoil any of Trespasser, but I have to say, you know, as a fan, I was really, really happy for, because there was just so much interaction with the characters. For me, it was like going back to visit the Citadel.
Yeah, that's what it seems like to me as well.
And, you know, there were moments where I, like, laughed so hard I cried, and I was kind of glad I didn't have my mic on when I was streaming, because I was cackling like a hyena over some things, and a couple things made me almost want to cry. This is like an hour and a half in, so I'm sure you will get many flaily G-chat messages as I go through this DLC. So, wow, I really stacked the deck against myself, because I have the other diversity question. I did this to myself, I admit it, somehow. So I'm curious, both as someone in the industry and as someone who enjoys playing games, what do you think the industry is currently doing right about diversity, and then what do you think could be improved?
I don't know if those are really actually different questions. I think on some level, things are just kind of getting better. Maybe I'm being a little naively optimistic, depending on your views of things, but like The Witcher 3 just released, I think, their expansion, and, you know, there was discussion about that, but it seems like Zirkanian, I think that's what their that nation is, you know, they seem a little bit more prevalent in that sort of stuff. At E3, I thought that, you know, a year ago, there was a lot of controversy with, like, Assassin's Creed or other games, you know, hey, there doesn't seem to be as much women, or women are too hard to do things, and, you know, why does it always seem to be women are getting cut? So I think that, kind of, even if you don't really have an opinion or one way or the other on, you know, is this good, is this bad, there's just enough conversation going on now than there was a year ago for, I think, some of this stuff, or certainly than a decade ago, which, I know for myself, it just makes me think, you know, I look at a character and I'm just like, wait a minute, do we really need this person to be this type? Or hey, why is my game setting, you know, as white as it is? Or why is it as male dominated? Does it need to be? And I know about, you know, I have some friends who play pen and paper games, and they're talking about how they actually, when they're creating a new NPC, they'll just roll a dice. And if it's an odd number, they'll make it a man. If it's an odd number or even number, they'll make it a woman. And they're just like, kind of having that realization of, you know, I didn't realize, just, you know, without even thinking about it. And I think, at least in my experience, a lot of it was just sort of, you know, not deliberate. It was just sort of, you fall into that status quo of that's the way things are, and you don't really realize that things get as lopsided as they can be without it being like an ostensible, like, do-ho-ho, I'm going to make these decisions and screw what everybody else says or anything like that. So I think it was you who actually had an interview with Firaxis, and, you know, they're talking about, yeah, like, trying to have an XCOM unit that was as representative of, you know, the world. It's a whole, the entire world is fighting against the alien invasion. And I remember at release of the original game, there was critique because, you know, I think all the characters spoke with like an American accent, but they ended up releasing language packs, if I remember correctly. And hopefully they keep doing that. And just sort of that, you know what, that, even if they're not being explicitly discussing about some of that stuff, I think you're starting to see some wave of that sort of acknowledgement just in some of the new content that's coming in. Hopefully it continues and it's not just a flash in the pan. And I think that's kind of, you know, what could be improved is sort of keeping the discussion going and not getting caught up on you know, we've done our thing, now we're not going to worry about it ever again type of thing. Hopefully that doesn't be the case, and keeping ourselves open to discussion. I know reading myself, you know, the first time I heard like the Kuzlin feedback, you start to worry, you know, are they accusing me of being a bad person because of this? Well, no, they're not. People are just saying, hey, I made a, you know, a person of color a Kuzlin, how come my family is still white? It's not, I think you're an awful person. So just us as devs realizing that the feedback is not like a personal slight, or I think that you're an awful person, so being cognizant of that, and then just realizing, you know what, this is obviously something that someone thinks would be improvement in their game experience, and it's one feature that, like any other, you know, someone could say, hey, I wish the combat was better. Someone can say, hey, I think I wish the romance diversity was better. And to me, I don't think it's actually that different in terms of it's, this is what I value in the game, and this is what the other person values in the game. So in that sense, it's a equal type of criticism. So hopefully we just kind of stay the course and keep allowing the conversations to happen. So
well, I think it's getting better, because it seems like there's more and more push, you know, both in video games and in tabletop, because honestly, I would say tabletop has a worse reputation.
That's
for
fair.
Diversity.
I don't have too much exposure to it. Most of my tabletop experience came after I started working at BioWare, so.
Yeah, I have some horror stories about tabletop that, you know, if I start talking about, it'll be the rest of the podcast.
Since you work in the game industry, do you ever get tired of games?
Maybe more so than I used to. I wouldn't. My answer to that in general would be no. I still love to play video games. There's some degree of overlap. Historically, I've considered RPG my favorite, but lately on my own time, I'm playing a lot more strategy, which I've always considered kind of 1A. And I think part of that is, you know, at work, I'm exposed and immersed and engaged in RPG-related discussion and playing and whatnot. So I think that there's a little bit of distancing myself. I still want to play The Witcher 3. I've heard lots of good things about The Witcher 3, but I think just due to the similarity of, you know, it's a fantasy style RPG, and just on that high level, I mean, there's obviously differences in the setting and the character and all of that, but yeah, it's sort of like, I don't really want to get into a fantasy RPG right now, so I'm going to play something else dead. I know some people get, yeah, burnout. There are some people, especially in QA, who have found that they have a hard time playing games now because all of the warts have kind of been exposed, because you train yourself to start to find them. But fortunately, I've been, I guess, kind of lucky despite that. I'm still able to kind of flip that switch. And even before I started working in QA, I was still able to identify bugs and not have them bother me depending on the severity of them. So maybe there's just some of my past experience with knowing what, you know, as a software developer in education, I could, you know, understand, oh, I bet I know why this bug happened. And, you know, maybe it'll make me laugh. Some bugs can be funny too. You know, Skyrim had some, anything that's physics related, Dragon Age free release, we had also, you know, if it's animation and you get someone who wants to do something and they want to, you know, salute the Inquisitor, and right when they do that, their entire mesh explodes into a million pieces for that salute and then forms itself back together, and you're just not expecting it, and it comes across very humorous. So in that sense, bugs can be entertaining, but I have not found that gaming in general. I still play probably more than I should, which I'm glad. It's my pastime. It's how, you know, I don't really watch TV. I play video games, so.
Yeah, I would like to play more video games one of these days.
Responsibility.
Yes, sadly, responsibility between day job and all the other stuff that I do.
You are pretty busy.
Yes, but I think I'm going to declare this weekend an amnesty weekend, and it's going to be just video games and drinking beer and doing nothing.
Some days you need days for yourself, yep.
Yeah. Well, our next question you've actually answered in various different ways about kind of what working QA is like, really. So I'm just going to kind of skip over that one in the script and mess things up and segue into the last question and, you know, the article that we will discuss shortly. So, you know, you're one of the BioWare devs that, you know, I see you interact a lot with fans, and, you know, it's just really charming to see, because, you know, like, BioWare fans, we're something. I can't think of a way to say that without sounding like an asshole.
I think all fandoms have that, so don't beat yourself up too much. There's people who, and part of it is just you really are engaged, which, so in that sense, it can be flattering.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking about, like, you know, the not-so-fun parts of engaging with fandom as, you know, for you as someone who makes the game.
Yeah.
But, you know, you said you had an interaction with another dev who was like, oh my god, you work at BioWare. So, do you ever, like, meet up with devs or talk to other devs that may not be used to having fans talk to them on social media? And, you know, we can get into this more when we get to the article, but, I mean, is that something that ever comes up, like, either talking with fans or with other developers, like, kind of, oh my god, this dev answered me, what do I do? Or this fan reached out, what do I do?
Not too much. I mean, we have, at least from, you know, from BioWare perspective, I got a quick crash course in Dragon Age Origin Days from, you know, Chris Priestley, and that'd presumably be someone like Fernando or Connell would go over that sort of stuff. So kind of, hey, if you want to interact with the community, here's, you know, the things to kind of keep in mind, just because, you know, you're one, you're a representative of the company, and two, you're also, you speak with a lot of authority, even if you don't really realize that. So, you know, it comes back to, you know, the things of, like, you know, be respectful of your fan base, because how you say something or how it comes across might not be interpreted the way that you were intending. So I think for myself, it's mostly just been a lot of, you know, common sense, you know, kind of don't be a dick and, you know, you'll be okay. There are times it can be difficult. I know myself, having that thick skin, because there are going to get people who are very upset, and it's a reflection of their not wanting to be upset. They wanted a feature. They really, really wanted to like Dragon Age Inquisition or whatever game they may be talking about. And to be let down, you know, you get some people who can be really intense about how they provide that feedback, and just reminding yourself that anything that might seem like it's coming across as aggressive is a reflection of the desire to not want to, like, they don't want to be disappointed. And as a game developer, I don't want to disappoint people either. So there's a degree of having thick skin. I think there's also a degree of acknowledging that how fans might say something isn't necessarily what. If a fan calls me lazy, they're probably not meaning that I sit on my hands and don't do any work, but they more, it's probably along the lines of they didn't like the decision that was made. And that's fair. That's the reality of it. We're going to make decisions. Some people are going to love those decisions. Other people aren't going to like those decisions. So there's kind of being grounded in the language, I think, has really helped me, because most of my early interactions was with, you know, Mass Effect. So there was, and I wasn't even working on it. So there was a lot of kind of intensity going on with the end of the trilogy. So it was just also a bit of a trial by fire, but it was also very different because I didn't work on Mass Effect. And it can be kind of hard when you're like, it's scary to release a game, because part of you, you're like, okay, I'm really proud of this, but like, am I just, you know, rose colored glasses? I worked on Dragon Age Inquisition for three years. Is it actually good? Or am I just lying to myself, you know, and it's not actually going to be well received? So then you put it out in the wild and you kind of close your eyes and you're like, oh, please be gentle, please be gentle, please be gentle. So I think Inquisition has been pretty well received. Sounds like Trespasser. I've only heard really, really glowing things about that. So it's kind of, whew, thank goodness. But so you take the good kind of with the bad, and hopefully get more good than the bad. And I think the important thing is, if you're feeling inundated with bad, and it can be really easy to overestimate it. I remember Oatmeal made a funny and appropriate comic where they were talking about, you know, you'll get 1,000 compliments, and then you'll get that one thing, and that one thing just mentally erases the previous 1,000 compliments you just got, and it can be hard to not take it to heart, because, you know, you invest so much in this, and some someone can be really scathing with how they tell you that they're not happy with it. So knowing when to take a break, give yourself some space. It is okay to, you know, self-care and all of that fun stuff. So if you're finding engaging with the community or whatever the case maybe is weighing on you, then by all means, don't hesitate to give yourself a break from it.
Yeah. And normally we would ask what else you're doing, but we know what else you're doing because you're working on Mass Effect Andromeda.
I'm very verbose with my answers too.
No, that's good. I like verbosity because, you know, I will talk all day about mostly anything if you let me.
So, I have issues with being maybe too much on, I'll send an email and they're like, dude, this is a wall of text. What are you doing?
They're like, give us the short version. Just yeah. This quick question.
TLDRs are my friend.
Well, we actually got a few questions all from our friend Tim, who's Thane on 1982 on Twitter. However, Tim, I'm sorry, a couple of your questions we can't really answer because, well, one, as Alan said before, he just now started working on Mass Effect. If we ever get anyone from BioWare who's worked on Mass Effect previously, maybe we can save that question for later.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, it's something that I just wouldn't even know the answer to, so.
Yeah, but David, do you want to read the question or do you want me to do it?
Oh, I can do that. So, Thane1982 on Twitter asks, what kind of professional environment does BioWare foster to remain so responsive to fan feedback?
That's a challenging question, I think. I mean,
it sounds hard, yeah.
It is. It's not even, there isn't really any like formal like welcome to BioWare fan interaction 101 type stuff. I did help out the online community team for a little bit, kind of in transition. The role that I started now on QA wasn't ready for me until like March. So when I wrapped up Dragon Age Inquisition, I was helping out Fernando. So I think I actually got credited as community manager, even though I was probably the most invisible community manager ever. But thank you, Fernando. But yeah, so they do, you know, hey, we're just about to release our game. If you want to interact with the, you know, fan base, you know, here's your do's and don'ts type thing. Just always, you know, don't be a dick, I think is the easiest way to sum up the rules of, you know, interact with fans, have fun with the fans by all means. Don't escalate things if they're getting bad. And if you ever do need a hand with anything, God bless Fernando or and Connell and those types. If you're ever finding yourself in a tricky situation, especially at cons, they've always been, you know, you're at a con, you're going to be publicly available, you know, learn a secret hand signal or give us stink eyes or whatever the case may be is, and we'll come over and we'll find a way to help you out if you feel like you need help. Fortunately, at cons, everybody's pretty much gushing in a wave of positivity, and so it didn't come up at all, but they give us those outs if we need them. So I know for myself, especially when I was working and interacting more on the forum, I'd be like, hey, can I get a second set of eyes? Because I don't know if this is, you know, was this an appropriate interaction or was this too much? And Connell and Fernando have been, they put themselves out there, and Connell's the community guy now, I believe, and Fernando is kind of the head guy for kind of all of the online aspects for that sort of stuff. So I know when I worked on Dragon Age Origins, you know, Chris Priestley, who was the community manager at the time, you know, he brought everybody in, especially because we were QA and we were going to be interacting on the forums, you know, helping solicit feedback for bugs that people were getting. So, you know, they kind of give that breakdown. But for the most part, I think it's kind of ad hoc where, I know speaking for myself, I kind of follow the lead of the leads, and I can see how Mark and Mike are interacting. And, you know, if they're talking about stuff, it's probably okay for me to talk about stuff. And Mike's actually been a guy who I would touch base with every now and then and be like, you know, is this the type of thing that's okay to talk about? And, you know, if he says yes or no, Aaron Flynn is another person who I kind of follow his lead. And I think they interact with the community well enough. David has been a long time for, I remember interacting with David on Baldur's Gate 2, I think, way back on the old Interplay message boards. So, yeah, so I don't know if I would want it to be anything ultra, you know, scripted or structured as well, though, because I think you don't want to force devs to have to interact necessarily with the community, because that might not be something that they want to do. Someone might be, I just want to be a super fantastic character artist, and interacting with the community isn't something I'm very comfortable with. So you wouldn't want to force me to interact in that case, but there's no kind of restrictions on it, and, you know, people don't go over my tweets or anything like that beforehand. So it's, you know, kind of, we, you know, as an employee, we trust you to be a good person. So you know, be a good person and everything's going to be okay. So I think that's, and in that sense, it's kind of nice and freeing because I really like, you know, David would go and he'd just write up his own kind of blog post or whatever the case may be on assorted things. And I find that interesting because even I'd still learn things. And I like that we're kind of, by all means, go and talk about stuff. And I would be, you know, candid as I could be on the forums and stuff like that. And I think, I know as a fan myself, that's the type of interaction I like having with devs. So I kind of, and Twitter and social media in general has kind of exploded, so you can get that in all sorts of new different ways now. So it's easy to kind of make yourself available to interact with people, I find now. And yeah, I have a good chunk of followers, and it's fun to talk with people, not even just as a developer, but about random other things as well. You know, other games that we're playing or just other parts of current events. So aside from being a supportive environment and one that says, hey, by all means, if you want to have fun talking with fans, go ahead and do it. And I think by doing that, they end up opening ourselves to having those interactions and feedback. Because to be honest, I've made some really good friends as a result of my interactions on the forum. And that's kind of, and then on Twitter as well. So I'm glad that those options were made available to me. And I think once you start to cultivate those types of relationships, it's very humanizing. So, and then, you know, you get along with people. Next thing you know, you're in GChat chatting.
Or on their podcast. That's awesome. Because, you know, I've been active in various fandoms for probably way longer than I want to admit on record. But it's just really, it's interesting to me because, you know, especially when you get into different areas of interacting, because, you know, there's Twitter, there's blog posts, there's the forums. Because for a while, I wouldn't go in the BioWare forums, actually. I was just like, nope, not today, Satan, not today. Because, and it wouldn't even be, you know, like the community folks, it would be other players that would be incredibly toxic. So, you know, seeing the change with the other games, like, you know, I was in a couple betas and, you know, I talked about this on a different episode that we recorded about, you know, that beta environment is almost, it's more family-like until everyone else gets to come in. Because then you also have more of a relationship with some of the devs and the community managers because you're one, helping, you know, finalize something. And two, it's I think there's more of a chance to have those conversations that, you know, the forums finally turned back to, I think. I think
there's an aspect of a large population. I mean, the ratio of fans clamoring for dev interaction is a challenging thing. And that was some of the stuff that I was kind of researching on Fernando would probably be a lot more generous, but for myself, just feeling like it was very difficult to try to figure out what were the best ways that you could do that sort of stuff. Because I think you look at any large AAA, you know, game studio forums. I remember I never posted, but I used to lurk on like Blizzard's and, you know, Riot had a reputation with League of Legends being a really aggressive community, and I know they've taken steps to try to improve that as well. And I think in general we're starting to see, you know, what are the things that we can do to try to take care of that, because you want to have it be as positive but still not, you know, if you don't like our game, I don't want to say you can't come and tell me about it, because that's still useful for me. So there are I think, yeah, those types of things. And yeah, when you get into beta things, I remember wandering in and talking with the keep beta, and so like you get a smaller group, so you just get people who, but by virtue of being a smaller group, there's more opportunities you get. You know, it's like, imagine a teacher, if you're, you know, you have a classroom of 15 students compared to a classroom of 10,000 students, that would be pretty intimidating. So yeah, if you're in on like the beta stuff, you're going to see the same other members as well. So you won't just foster relationships with the managers or any of the developers that are interacting with that, but also fellow community members, because you're just going to see the same people in the same discussions, where you get to a critical mass where there's just so much that it can be really hard to follow. And I know someday, like, you know, Dragon Age Inquisition release, you could hit refresh and every thread that was on the front page would be completely different than the previous, you know, 5 seconds ago, because it was just moving so fast. So it can be kind of hard to be like, whoa, where am I stepping into? So
yeah, so we're almost done, and we've actually talked about this at length. But I want to delve deeper into this article on Gamma Sutra, which is 8 tactics for engaging with players. Because, you know, like, we all play games, and, you know, know, and you're a dev. And I just thought this was interesting because, you know, seeing the way that some devs and some folks online respond to people just makes me wonder. It's like, you know, this is someone you want to buy your product. And I don't know if that's like kind of, I don't want to call it a rookie mistake, but someone who may be like they're a great dev, but they're not savvy with social media and interaction and publicity. Because one of the things on here is be transparent about the process. And I, you know, like you were saying, it's like your words have weight. Even if you are just talking about, you know, a game you personally play, people are going to assign weight to your words because you happen to work at BioWare.
Oh, for sure.
And so these things like build trust, be authentic, show empathy. But the first one I think is really important, but don't come across as arrogant because I think, and David, feel free to jump in because I realize I'm kind of running away with this one.
Oh, no, you're fine.
You know, and this is me putting on my I Need Diverse Games hat, and this kind of oddness you feel when you become known.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I felt it even, like, once I kind of broke, I think it was maybe 1,000. I think I'm just under 2,000 followers on, like, Twitter. But I think, yeah, when I started to get close to, like, 1,000, it was, you know what, there's enough people following me now that, like, I can't just be reckless, I guess, on my Twitter as if I was just some strange person making inappropriate jokes or whatever the case may be, so.
Yeah, because, you know, it makes you realize I could say one thing and people are going to run with it no matter what you say or what you do, you know.
It's kind of a symptom. I don't tumble, but Twitter and Tumblr, I find, both kind of have the issue where context can be easily lost just from, like, from what I'm watching, when I see, like, discussions where someone can quote someone can retweet someone, and you get kind of multiple different threads that spawn from the same original post. So someone might be, hey, what about this? And I'd be like, oh, you're right, you're totally, I didn't even think about that. But on a different thread, people might be just going, what? How could he say that? And then it turns into the, like, this dog pile, and maybe someone comes to my defense, and then now those two people are having a big fight, and I'm still getting added in all of them, and it's kind of like, this is awkward, and this is big giant, like, you know, fandom fight going on, or whatever the case may be, and you actually don't realize that on the other side, I kind of, you know, made amends with the person that I had offended on the other side. So I think that that's part of the challenges, I think, of social media as well. And to come back to, like, don't come across as arrogant, it is also, I think, a challenge in dealing with only text. Because it was actually funny, just an anecdote today where I was asking a programmer, I got him to verify something for me last week. Turns out that there was a misunderstanding, and when I was telling him or following up with something, he's like, okay, we were just chatting on IM. And he's like, I mean, it's in as friendly as a way as possible, but I actually shouldn't have approved that thing that you did. You know, to me, I kind of chuckled because it didn't come across as hostile or anything like that. But, you know, it's just sort of that reality of, I should say this just in case, because if I just say, by the way, I shouldn't have let you do that thing, might come across as really terse. And I think that's a challenge I think everybody has when you're dealing with only texts. So, and then I think also the human element of, for better or worse, and sometimes worse, if I get called on something, my innate response will be like, I didn't mean to be a bad person. How dare you call me a bad person? Even though you didn't call me a bad person, that's just sort of the way my brain took it. You know, defensive walls get put up, and that's not fair to the person who is giving the feedback as well. So at least that's the way I see it. Hopefully I didn't make the entire world angry with me with that, but
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
You're probably fine.
David, did you have any thoughts about the article?
It's not the sort of stuff that we think people need to read. It all seems pretty basic, but I guess some people do need to be reminded of this from time to time.
Yeah, I need that reminder on occasion because I broke my own rule and read the comments on something I wrote.
It's hard. They're your babies.
Yeah, and, you know, and I will happily tell on myself because, you know, the whole, oh my god, you're not really a gamer thing is like one of those things that just immediately sets me on edge.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of gatekeeping type stuff either.
Well, because like the Phyrexis article, it's like, you didn't play the game. And I'm like, how do you know that? Because I didn't follow, you know, nerd cred 101 checklist that apparently you are keeping.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just like, okay then.
Yeah, I think that goes into number 5, which is, yeah, like, don't get sucked into arguments, which probably feeds into number 1. If you're not getting sucked into arguments, you're not going to give opportunities for it to come across as sounding arrogant and stuff like that, because like going back to, I have a lot of power and influence, and I'm guilty of this as well, where there'll be times, especially, you know, we're crunching on a game and I'm already stressed and someone says something and I'm just like, well, I work on the game, so you don't know what's going into the decisions that we're making, so blah, blah, blah. So, and there have been times when I would respond to something and I was like, I shouldn't respond at all, and I would just delete, close the window, go on to do something else, because sometimes it's just not going to make things better.
Yeah. Because who was it? I was thinking of Kelly Sue DeConnick, because she's often put out as like kind of a best practice of someone to follow and how to engage with fans on both Tumblr and Twitter. And, you know, as someone in the Bioware fandom, don't go on Tumblr. Just don't do it. just if you ever consider it, just talk to David Gator. Just don't do it. I would say no. As your friend and a fan, don't do it.
Duly noted.
And unless David or you have anything else to say with that, to talk about with this article, we can kind of wind down with what we're playing, because I mean, it's obvious what I'm playing, but I'll let you go first as our guest.
All right, well, yeah, especially if you follow me on Twitter, I've been tweeting with Shadowrun Hong Kong has been a game that I really enjoyed. I played all three of them now, and the first one that I played was my first kind of exposure to the Shadowrun game universe in any capacity, so that was actually I like the cyberpunk kind of mildly dystopian future type thing going on. And with each game, I think they've kind of just refined their process. And especially like the last two, especially the way I look at it, the first game, I think you could tell that they were also making an engine to make their game. And because with the second and the third one, I just got the impression that has that kind of je ne sais quoi extra oomph about it. I think just able to spend more time on creating the actual content, because Dragonfall, I thought, was fantastic, and I think Hong Kong picked up right where Dragonfall left off, and it was really interesting. I love the kind of reactivity that would go in for your character builds and that sort of stuff. And when I wasn't doing that, I was playing some completely mindless multiplayer with Payday 2. And now that I just finished Shadowrun Hong Kong, I got recommended to put another one by the creators of made Mark of the Ninja, Invisible Ink, which is another like turn-based strategy in a dystopian future. Less combat-y, much more stealth. You're snooping around corporate buildings trying to steal information and stuff like that. I only just got started with it, so I can't speak too much more about that. But so far, it seems like the type of thing where if I'm not careful, I will lose hours of sleep.
Oh, dear. David, do you want to go next?
Sure. I've also been playing Shadowrun Hong Kong, but I've been pretty busy, so I haven't gotten very far.
Oh, no, I was going to say I bought it, but I haven't even had a chance to install it yet.
Yeah, real life can be like that, but no, I didn't. It wasn't too long. It took me about, I think, around 17 or 18 hours, but it was a very enjoyable one. So when you get some time, you have the Alan stamp of approval for all of the weight that is.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I do. One thing I do like about it is I think on some level, maybe since the engine has clearly been modified, they considered the story they were making more than the engine, and I think the engine benefits for it.
Fair.
Huh. I don't think I've ever heard someone say that about a game. Now I'm curious, what makes you say that, David?
Well, I don't know. It just seems a lot more, like, put together well in such a way. And one way to get something that seems so well put together is to think about what you're doing with tools rather than what tools, you know, rather than just the tools.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying, where, yeah, like, rather than being constrained on what type of game you're making based on the tools that you have, having the ability, and not everybody gets this, and I think that goes back to, you know, this is their second and third game working with that, is now, you know, they already have that foundation. Let's take what we have and add the things that we need to create the story that we want. Whereas with the first game, you know, they have, let's create everything, and now we need to make a game.
Basically, yeah, the first one was much more about how moddable it was. It was very much marketed as like an engine, if I remember correctly.
Neverwinter Nights, I think, suffered from that too. I don't know if you played that one or not, but it was, to me, the campaign, like, compared to Baldur's Gate 2, wasn't my cup of tea, but all of the engine aspect of it was pretty intense. But with the expansion packs, it seemed like, okay, well, you know, we've built the engine, now let's make, you know, focus on making the game content.
And I haven't touched Baldur's Gate or Neverwinter Nights in so long.
Me neither, so don't feel too bad.
Now, wasn't there chatter or people wanted like a remastered Baldur's Gate?
I wouldn't be surprised. I know the Beam Dog. I think that Beam Dog made enhanced editions, I believe, of both of them, and then I think they're either making a new one or I'm not sure the full details of it, but yeah, I know they made enhanced editions of it. And I know some people who have played it. For myself, it wasn't something that I picked up simply because I play the crap out of those games, and they're sort of like, I'm happy where they are, and I don't feel like I need to go back and replay them. But I know that a lot of people were super excited to pick them up.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe if I get a fit of nostalgia, maybe I'll do it. Let's see. And as for me, got Trespasser. I got about an hour and a half in last night. And I want to flail about it, but it would be... Well, by the time this goes up, it won't be that spoilery.
Yeah, our listeners are in the future. We should remember.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I know, but still. I mean, there are people who still haven't played Descent or the other DLC. But just for anyone listening, if you really enjoyed Mass Effect 3 Citadel and want to get a sense of these characters and kind of what they were doing and that camaraderie you built during the Inquisition, you will enjoy Trespasser. Because, I want to flail about it. Maybe we can flail about it once we're not recording. But I was very excited about it, and I plan to stream the rest of it this weekend. And I actually picked up Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, and I'm blaming that one solely on Turekimusa and his excitement over the game. So that's two games, Turek, you owe me.
I was already probably going to get Witcher 3, but he did the same for me for The Witcher 3, which was just, wow, okay, you clearly really like this game, and I'm curious why. Just what is it about it? I respect your opinion type thing, so now I'm excited to play it as well. So it's happening again with Metal Gear Solid 5. It's getting kind of bit. I haven't really played Metal Gear Solid since the original, but I was more of a fan of the more grounded Splinter Cell franchise. So when that one came out, I went down that path instead of Metal Gear Solid. But there's enough that makes me want to, kind of get the Metal Gear Solid experience, because I hear number 5 is an experience.
Oh, it is. So I hope you like stealth games.
I do.
And you have a lot of patience.
Sometimes.
Because I put in 8 hours, I may have gotten 3 missions done. Because the stealth is just, there's no getting around it. And what I like about it is there's a penalty if you kill people. You lose kind of fame and heroic, I think it's heroism points.
Oh, interesting.
So if you, the more stealth you can pull off and the more kind of either takedowns or there's the fulsome system where you actually air balloon people out to the base. And
interesting.
My roommate's been playing it, and he mentioned that as what he interpreted as an incentive not to kill people, is that apparently these people would rather work for you and you just have to Shanghai them instead. So there's a noticeable benefit to doing that instead of just murdering your way through whatever it is they ask you to do. Does that sound accurate, Tanya?
It does. And murdering your way through actually doesn't work. if either of you are bored one day and can listen, and hear me swear a lot, there is a mission that I'm currently stuck on where when it reloads me right in the vision of two guards. And I'm just like, oh, so, wow. Stealth. And I actually got around it by hiding on my horse. There's I don't know how this is supposed to actually be pulled off.
Oh, I think I've seen that. You ride on the side?
Yes. And you just kind of cling to the horse's saddle. And it's how are they not wondering where this random horse just showed up?
Yeah,
from?
It's some just video game logic for you. I spotted you for 5 seconds, but now I haven't seen you for the next 10 seconds. Therefore, no longer a threat. So, yeah, I think we'll chalk that one up as, I think, gameplay ability. They didn't want to be too punishing. Real life stealth probably be excruciatingly punishing.
Well, there's parts where it's I'm hiding in the grass, I'm in the desert, but I'm wearing all black. You mean they really don't see me and it's daylight? So it's been a test for me because I am impatient. I'm that person who would do DPS damage characters versus stealth.
Mm-hmm.
So this will be a challenge, but seeing Tarik post screenshots and talk about it is making me my competitive streak come out, and I want to get better at it.
Nice.
So yeah, that's been my kind of, my concession to fear of missing out / I trust Tarik's opinion, and hopefully he will get a good chuckle out of this whenever this episode goes live. So sadly we're at an end because I don't want to stop talking, but Well, I'm enjoying the conversation. And, you know, listeners, for those of you laughing or listening and then laughing at me, I was really super nervous to have Ellen on. So this was very fun. And like you said, talking with a friend. So this has been awesome. And I'm really, really happy that we got you on the show, Ellen.
Well, you're welcome. I'm flattered that you were nervous. I think at best, I am a Z-list celebrity. So I'm not, hopefully wasn't too intimidating. But no, I was fine. Like I said, yeah, it's a chat with friends, so it makes it easier.
Yeah, okay, you said Zed, so this is going to be me sounding really dumb.
Z?
So, instead of zero, do you say Zed in Canada?
I say Zed. Instead of zero?
You said Zed, and I'm like, Zed?
Zed, like the letter Zed. Z, yeah, XYZ, XYZ.
It's just the letter Z.
I'm not
an A-list celebrity. I am a Z-list celebrity. I'm at the bottom of the alphabet. There are several tiers of celebrity higher than me, I think, so.
I say zero. Well, I swear I've heard people say, like, Zed instead of zero, and I don't know if it's me just not hearing.
East Coast Canada is very different, so maybe they do. I don't think I say about, I think I say about, but maybe I'm biased. But, yeah, no, maybe it's not something I'm aware of, though.
No, there's been no about.
I'm not aware of any Zeds meaning zero, but it's a big world.
Okay, now listeners, you know that I'm entirely silly and can't hear anything.
That's fair.
And with me having embarrassed myself entirely.
Good way to end.
Yes. So if you want to share where folks can find you online, that would be great.
Sure. Best place to get if you want to chat is at Alan Shoemaker on Twitter. And that's where I spend most of my online interaction time. And if we get along well, I will talk back. That's not true. I'll talk back rarely, but I like to chat.
Yay. And then you do have a YouTube channel, but you just kind of like upload your Let's Plays and stuff.
I do. I just occasionally use it. If people are like, hey, I wouldn't mind seeing that game. I did a little bit more of it. Just kind of, it actually originally started with because I wanted to play Amnesia and I'm a big giant chicken shit. So by doing it as a Let's Play, it gave me an audience to share the experience with, even if it was all just in my head at the time. So otherwise I wouldn't have been able to play it. And then some other people were like, hey, you should do other stuff. And I was like, okay, so I did.
That's how it happens.
Yep. Yeah, I haven't been too active with it lately, but maybe I'll do Walking Dead Season 2. I still need to play that.
Okay. David, where can folks find you?
I am on Twitter as at Red Conversation. I'm on Patreon, patreon.com/RedConversation. And my website is davidlreeves.com.
And you do Twitch,
correct? I do, but I haven't recently. Because I haven't really...
That's okay.
I've just been distracted.
Believe me, I understand.
Yeah, that would be red_conversation, so at Twitch.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I'm Cypher of Tear everywhere, and we have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/ineeddiversegames, which helps to fund this show, because, you know, like, we like podcasting, but it is not free.
Yeah.
So, if you are a Patreon, you can get the show early, so that is a brazen hint for you to become a Patreon for as little as $1 a month. And with that shameless plug, we're gonna call it a night on this episode. So thanks again, Ellen, and we look forward to talking to you on Twitter.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks again for the invite.
You're welcome.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good night, everybody. Take care.
Bye.
Hits your mollies on the beat. Raise our magic wands to the haters at our feet. Catch us diving on that moon. Power! In the middle of the night is our fighting hour. Travel traveling through the internet, cyberspace, looking for the next fucking awful trend to hate. But it's all good, magical girls and boys. We're weird, you're strange, we're stranger. Got that magic just like glitter, making basic bitches look real bitter. Magical girls run the world. 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 And magical boys too. Just a little bit of 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 a little